each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
And good afternoon and welcome to Winds of Change. This is Mary Helen Fiorito. I am the Cardinal Francis George Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C., and it is my privilege as ever to be sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And will the winds of change be occurring tomorrow? That is the question. The midterm elections, the much ballyhooed. Is it the most important election that we've ever faced as a country, as I heard on ABC News this morning? Or is it simply just another very interesting midterm? Well, I have the guest who can hopefully answer those questions for us, Dan Proft, the host of Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. Dan, thank you so much for being here with me in studio.
My pleasure. Thank you.
It was a great privilege, really, to have you, given really the enormity of what's going to happen tomorrow. Are you doing commentary anywhere this evening on the news, or is your own station doing something to follow the midterms?
No, okay. I just have to do my morning drive shift, and then I'm released.
Yes, that's right.
Thankfully,
well, my goodness, it's going to be a late night for you, though, I would imagine.
Yes, for sure.
Well, Dan, obviously, on Winds of Change, we do not endorse or oppose any particular candidates, but we do talk about issues and what's at stake, you know, for particularly life issues and other issues of importance that revolve around the dignity of the human person. So let's kind of start on a national level. I was listening to your colleague, Mike Gallagher, on my way in here after your show finished this morning, Dan, and he was saying he feels pretty calm and comfortable. And, you know, I have to say, I kind of share his comfort level. I know there's some races that are very, very close. But I'm also, you know, I'm very mindful, Dan, of a conversation you and I had the night before President Trump won, when I was very concerned, you know, we were going to be looking at 4 and possibly 8 more years of a very, very pro-abortion administration. I remember I called you and I said, talk me off the ledge here. And you said, she's not going to win. And you were absolutely right. And I was kind of thinking it was going that way. But you are someone who follows the numbers and the polls. What do you think in terms of, let's kind of start with the House, because that I think is going to most directly impact some pro-life legislation I'm kind of concerned about. What do you think is going to happen there? What's your best guess?
I mean, it's so close. You know, there's no blue wave coming. It's going to be a tornado, so it'll touch down in certain places around the country, including perhaps in Illinois in the suburbs. We can get to that. But I think it's going to be very close to the 23 that Democrats need to take the House on either side of it. Sean Trendy, who does some very good analysis for RealClearPolitics.com, you know, he's put out a couple of pieces over the last 3 or 4 days playing out scenarios where the Republicans keep the House by a seat or two, and playing out scenarios where, you know, they lose the seat by a House or two. And all of the races that he looks at that are the swing seats, I mean, you can make a strong case that you're talking about you know, fractions of a percentage where some of these races sit right now. Obviously, the odds are in favor of Democrats because there are more swing seats that Republicans need to win than Democrats do. However, the amalgam of all of those swing seats, Trump won by 4 points in the 2016 presidential election. So, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, you would understand this as a lawyer, like the law professors always told you, make an argument for both sides. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to be able to make a compelling argument, and I can make a compelling argument for both sides because it's that close.
Wow. Okay, so this is in your mind then, not to put words in your mouth, but closer than the Trump-Clinton election was.
Well, certainly closer than it turned out to be, although, I mean, I guess it's pretty close. You get an electoral landslide, but you lose the popular vote. That's pretty close. But, you know, when you're talking about could be a seat or two out of 435, I'd say that's that determines control. That's pretty close.
Right. And so, well, let's talk about then some of those national elections. And, you know, it was funny. Did you watch Saturday Night Live by any chance?
Yeah, Saturday?
So I always think that they are kind of a bellwether in some ways about kind of what's really going on. And the commercial that they had featuring Democrats saying, oh, we're fine. But they're, you know, drinking gallons of coffee at a time and, you know, taking narcotics and drinking and that kind of stuff. So you wonder, even among the people who are sort of the kind of hard left, do they think that it might not go their way?
I think they're nervous. Yeah. Look, I mean, they should be nervous. In 2010, when Republicans took back the House against President Obama in the White House, after he ramrodded Obamacare through, Republicans picked up 60 seats.
Yeah.
It wasn't close.
Right.
And so here they're scraping and clawing and scratching, and they need $80 million from Bloomberg and $120 million from Steyer, and they're outraising and outspending Republicans in these key races by factors of two and three, and yet they're still not in a position where they are confident that this is a done deal, because it's not a done deal. So that there's a lot of reasons for them to be nervous.
So I guess kind of lessons learned the last time, possibly, that might be.
Well, that too, right? Yeah. I mean, that the fact that they were so gobsmacked by Trump's victory, it probably has them a little chastened.
Right.
As well.
That was another very funny Saturday Live skit after that, where they show them, you know, watching the election.
You didn't need a skit. You just needed to watch all the cable news channels of the left and the reactions.
Who was I watching? I think it was ABC that night, where whoever, one of the commentators, was saying, well, I mean, he was supposed to be objective, right? He was one of the station employees saying, well, we can still pull it out if we can get Indiana. And I thought, and then he caught himself, you know.
The tears sort of sort of concede the point
the
that maybe you're not
of wine
objective.
Appearing on the consoles there. So, well, let's kind of start in terms of the national races. A couple of the ones I that seem to be getting the most media attention, Texas, so Beto O'Rourke and Ted Cruz. He seems to have a fairly comfortable lead. Are you comfortable with where he is?
Yeah, I think Ted Cruz is going to win that race.
Okay.
I mean, it's you know, you've got Greg Abbott, the governor there, who's winning his reelection in a walk.
Okay.
I think Cruz wins. I mean, look, Beto O'Rourke's the it girl for Democrats in the Senate this cycle, and the amount of money he's raised is
it's extraordinary.
Staggering.
Yeah, it's extraordinary.
But look, I think Ted Cruz wins the race.
Pulls it off, and he's such an important. You know, the reason I wanted to start with that particular race is because he has been such an articulate and consistent pro-life voice in the Senate. And you know, if we get another bite at the Pain Capable Act, or if the Supreme Court grants cert in this Indiana case, barring Down syndrome abortions and abortions based on race or gender, which I think they are going to grant certain. So that is going to be something that's going to be a very interesting, you know, sort of thing to watch. Might that, you know, become federal legislation at some point? If it plays in Indiana, I think it could go somewhere. So
I mean, look, something people don't understand is political culture. So you should understand it, because here in Illinois, Chicago, we have this kleptocratic political culture that sort of consumes and poisons everything. Well, in Texas, they have a political culture too, and this is why you see, for example, Republicans getting both Cruz and Abbott getting substantial percentages of the Latino vote. Abbott, I think, is going to win the Latino vote straight up, because because it doesn't matter your background, your race, is the political culture informs how you view life in the place you've chosen to locate, and so Latinos assimilate into the Texas culture just as a Chicago transplant would.
Right. But Latinos, you know, when you survey them across the board, they are more pro-life than some of their Caucasian peers would be.
Oh, sure.
That respect for life is very much built into the Latino culture. So it would be, that's always really surprising to me, and African-Americans as well.
Yeah.
So many, and I know Chicago's just a completely different animal, but it always, you know, when you look at New York City, where more black babies are aborted every year than are born alive, it's shocking to me that you then still have African-American people voting for the very party that's harming them in that regard.
They should all It should have the Gosnell movie shown in every CPS classroom.
Yeah, have you seen it yet?
I have not.
Yeah, I took my high school senior to go and see it, and I have to tell you, Dan, I have never been in a movie where at the end of it, literally the entire theater was silent, like no one said a word, and everybody just kind of looked at each other. It was like being at a wake. Everybody just got up and walked out, and I read the book before I went to see the movie. And so I kind of had a sense of what was going to be coming in certain points. And it really is done like a, you know, like one of those crime scene novel television shows.
Yeah,
you
it's
see,
a
right?
trial
like,
movie.
Right, it's a trial movie. And so it's there's nothing graphic shown. And even when they are showing the photo of baby boy A, who was his first conviction because he was found not guilty of the first two, it's very powerful. They just show the pictures of the jurors as they're shown the picture. And that makes you want to cry probably more than seeing the actual picture. But then they say at the end, you know, you can go to gosnellmovie.com and see each of the exhibits that was entered into
evidence. It's one of those movies that I'm sure, I mean, we spoke on my show to Andrew Clavin, the screenwriter for it.
And yes, I heard that interview.
It's one of those movies, it's like Flight 93 or United 93. You walk out and you just walk out.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
You're reflecting on what you just saw and the implications of it.
Right, but no, I think that's a good point. I think that every high school senior really should see that movie before they go off to college because, you know, before they're radicalized. I think certainly in Catholic and Christian high schools where we still have a chance at forming kids and their consciences, they need to see something like that. And, you know, I did a debate at, where was I? The University of Tennessee, I think, or Alabama. No, I was at the University of Alabama and debating somebody from NARAL, the National Abortion Rights Action League. And she actually, because the Gosnell thing came up, and she actually tried to turn the tables on me. She said, this is really the fault of the pro-life movement. You created Gosnell because with all your restrictions and regulations and look at Pennsylvania, I thought, and I said, no, because guess what? The National Abortion Federation, he applied 3 times to be a member of you all, and you all said no. So because you had inspected his clinic and told him he couldn't be a part of it because even he was too much for even you, but you never reported him. And that's where they get caught up in their lies. They knew about him for years because they wouldn't let him in their little trade associations, yet they never reported him. But, you know, it's too bad that movie has kind of been shut out in terms of media attention other than, you know, good stations like yours that are drawing attention to it.
Although it's lucky it got distribution at all. I mean, obviously it was a fight from the very beginning to get any kind of distribution. The streaming services turned it down. So the fact that it's in at least suburban theaters around here is, you know,
and it's still
a significant achievement.
Yeah. And that it's still there now. And of course, it actually, you know, money talks at the end of the day, as you as an economics, you know, professional would agree, I would think, you know, and so it's still pulling in money. I think it's still number 9 at the box office.
Yeah.
So despite no publicity, et cetera, et cetera. So the other race kind of close to home, and as you know, Winds of Change here, we go into 4 different states, Indiana being one of them, is this Joe Donnelly race. What are your senses of that?
I think Mike Brown's going to win that race.
Yeah. Do you think so? Okay.
I mean, it's very close. You know, it's just what you see with some of these races where you just scratch your head and say, well, how could Indiana not elect Mike Braun with everything that's happened positive under Republican leadership at the state level? But it's always difficult to take out an incumbent.
Yeah.
You built up a lot of favors. You built up a lot of name ID. You built up some good feelings. People get fooled by candidates who pretend to be one thing when it's time to campaign and they're another thing when they go to D.C. or go to the state capitol. But I think Mike Braun's going to win that race. That's going to be one of the pickups. And and I think he's run a good campaign. He's the right guy for this time.
Mm-hmm.
He beats 2 incumbent members of Congress in the primary, did Braun, and then he'll knock out a 3rd in 1 cycle, I think, which is pretty impressive. And it also speaks to the desire for non-swamp creatures.
Right.
Among the electorate, and I think the Hoosiers are no exception.
Well, you know, one of the most effective of Braun's ads that I saw was one featuring the Little Sisters of the Poor and asking why Donnelly was, you know, attempting to thwart their charitable work, you know, by trying to impose fines on them, et cetera. So I thought that was quite good, you know, sort of tapping into, you know, the Catholic vote there. But also the fact that apparently his family business owns a factory in Mexico, or at least they outsource a lot of their labor out of state. Is that correct?
Donnelly.
That's Donnelly. Right, correct.
Yeah,
that's what I meant. Yeah,
right.
So that Donnelly does that. And, you know, and I think the wages that these laborers are paid are something like $3 a week. I mean, it's something just disgraceful. So you'd think for someone who, you know, purports to be this Democrat champion for the poor, I'm glad that Braun, you know, highlighted that hypocrisy, because I think that really resonates with people. And then, you know, finally, I think that his vote against Kavanaugh is going to hurt him.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, especially with every new report on the post-Kavanaugh confirmation with one of his accusers, Julie Swetnick, and mm-hmm. that porn lawyer being referred to the Justice Department for investigation by Grassley. And then the story out this weekend that another anonymous accuser turned out not to be anonymous, recanted, saying that she made the whole thing up because she wanted attention.
Right.
So for those people who were so upset thinking that women's voices weren't being heard, no, they were heard and they're continuing to be heard and investigated. And we're going to and what's being done is proper, separating people who made a credible charges, if there were any, from those who were, finding out with each passing day did not.
Yeah. And you know, it's that particular, I think that event and then the story of the caravan are that really going to be, you know, when polls are done, two of the things that really motivated a lot of voters, because it's and perhaps on either side, but these are the two stories that seem to be driving a lot of the election.
I think the caravan story motivates your Trump voter, motivates your Republican base voter. It's been noticeable how unwilling any Democrat in a tight congressional race, whether it be in the House or the Senate, has been willing to engage on that issue. Even Beto O'Rourke, he was an El Paso city council member. He went to high school there. The congressional. He's like, I want to study the issue. Like, this is the first time border security in El Paso has ever come up.
Never been an issue before.
So the fact that they don't want to talk about it because they have to straddle this line between their radical abolish ICE base and between where 80% of Americans are is really instructive.
Right. Well, when we come back from our break, Dan, we'll continue our conversation and we'll move into some local races. This is Mary Fiorito sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Here is an important message from Winds of Change. The upcoming election could be a turning point for the future of the United States. The pillars of our faith are the sanctity of life and the sanctity of marriage. We can't tell you who to vote for, but we can tell you, as a Catholic, to be registered and to get out and vote your faith.
The Winds of Change.
The Winds of Change.
On AM 750, WNDZ. And on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
How long has it been since you have been to church? Busy schedule? Work? Or just lost interest? To be Catholic is not just merely attending Mass as just another weekend activity to be checked off the to-do list. Participation in the sacred liturgy gives you the opportunity to be intimately connected to Christ through the Holy Eucharist. You can also cleanse yourself of sin through the sacrament of reconciliation as a baptized Catholic. Come before the iconic monstrance to be in Christ's presence in the sacred silence of the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. St. Stan's is just off the Kennedy, 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Come back to Christ through the sacred liturgy and his gift of the sacraments at St. Stan's.
And welcome back. This is Mary Helen Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And I'm joined this hour by Dan Proft, host of Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer, WIND, which is very close to Winds of Change. But this should be the name of your show, actually.
Sure,
think
right.
About it. It would work maybe a little more clearly.
It'd be nice to bring Winds of Change to Chicago.
Yes, yes, and across the country. So that's what we're talking about. What's going to happen tomorrow? Is anything going to change for the better or for the worse? And, you know, can we talk a little bit about some of the president's stops along the way here? Because, boy, he's been out campaigning quite a bit. And I was, you know, was traveling this past weekend, so I was staying in a hotel and flipping back and forth between MSNBC and CNN and Fox. You know, honestly, between CNN, my daughter was saying, Mom, it's like we live in two different countries. I mean, between the Fox coverage and the CNN coverage, Steve Cortez, who's one of, you know, friend of your show and on frequently, you know, they were talking about the caravan issue. And he was saying, listen, now, just because, you know, I lock my door at night doesn't mean I hate my neighbors. He said, it means I love the people who live inside my house and I want to protect them from someone who might harm them. And the same analogy is applicable here. And the person he was debating just, you know, called him every name under the book. It was just disgraceful. I thought this is what is taking the place of, you know, intellectual dialogue here. But just in terms of this whole caravan issue, How much do you think it's going to impact? Certainly, it has to play in Texas, right, and in Arizona. And is the Martha McSally race, do you think, influenced by that in particular?
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly border states may be more pronounced, but in general, I mean, before the Kavanaugh confirmation flap, the number one issue to Trump voters was immigration policy, mm-hmm. And border security. That was motivating. And, you know, and when you have a good economy, you can look to other issues that right. say this is what's really central. This is something that we need to address now that this problem is improving or the circumstances are improving. And so, no, I think border security is, and immigration policy in general, has been, is, will continue to be a national debate. And people want structural changes made in a lot of different directions. And because we haven't done anything other than run on the same hamster wheel for the better part of the last 30 years with right. immigration policy in this country, you have all sides that are wholly unsatisfied with where we find ourselves.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's the community that seems to be really doubly motivated by this whole caravan story are legal immigrants. So like Steve Cortez's father, he mentions that sure. often. And, you know, my mother was just recalling to me the other day when she emigrated here from Great Britain, she had to wait for 2 years in Canada till my father could prove that he had a job before he could come in.
This is the whole thing. It's covered so badly. It's like, you know, every immigrant views this issue the same way. And they don't. If you actually look at the segmented polling on this, there's very different attitudes about first generation versus second, third generation immigrants to this country about what should be done with respect to border security and immigration policy generally. Mm-hmm. And look, most people are fairly, you know, reasonable and practical about it. Mm-hmm. You have to have security at the border. You have to know who's coming in and why they're coming in. And maybe we should look at things in terms of criteria for entrance other than just familial relationship, like more skills-based immigration. Those are reasonable conversations to have, but it's very difficult to have a reasonable conversation with people because they disagree with you. All they have to offer is, you know, the isms and the phobias to explain your position. And so it just doesn't go anywhere.
Right. And yeah, it's and this is particularly troubling because I think you'll not find anyone with more sympathy and empathy towards someone who wants to come to this country to change their lives and their family's lives than someone else who has done it. But I think you'll also find, you know, resentment or, you know, just a bit of being nonplussed on the part of the same people by saying, you know, yeah, it was a lot of work, but you're casting aspersions onto us when you come in illegally because they feel like it's bringing them in to the same kind of category of people and it's making their lives harder here. So, you know, maybe some self-interest motivating that, but definitely, you know, they have a sense of it. Are you surprised that the McSally race is as close as it is, given all of this that we've just discussed?
Well, not just that, but I mean, her opponent, this Kristen Sinema, who's a member of Congress, yeah. I mean, is just,
she's a little quirky.
She's about three standard deviations off.
Right.
I mean, she is way out there. Yeah. The things that she says, the things that she's done, the lifestyle she leads open and notoriously. It's a little weird, but
yeah.
Look, you've had a lot of California move to Arizona, as
somebody texted
our show this morning that yeah. Arizona doesn't need a wall on their southern border. It needs a wall on their western border.
That's right. There should be a caravan of Californians coming
in. But some of it could be Jeff Flake and his antagonism toward President Trump and whatever influence that has. Some of it could just be, again, antagonism to Trump, and people are looking at the federal races different than they are the state races.
What about McCain's animosity towards Trump?
All of it. But, I mean, look, Ducey, the governor there, just like in Texas, he's strolling to his reelection.
Right.
It's not competitive Republican. So it's interesting to see such drop-off between the gubernatorial candidate in Texas and Arizona and the Senate candidates. And I suspect some of that has to do with the Trump factor in Arizona.
And do you think that Trump's campaign stops along the way are helping or hurting the candidates that he's stumping on behalf of?
Oh, I think they're a net plus because, you know, in the enthusiasm deficit that people talk about all the time, that's a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to get turnout. And those maybe casual voters who came out en masse to vote for Trump in 2016, they need to be back in 2018 to win
right.
these seats, to hold other seats. And so I think him sort of whipping the base is really important.
Right. And, you know, I think I mentioned this to you on your show one time that, you know, I think certainly for pro-life voters, I mean, wild horses don't keep, you know, pro-life voters away from polls.
Right.
And so when that's really an issue, and I'd like to just, having said that, switch to a local race, which I follow emotionally, though I'm not. I don't live in the district. I'm very concerned about, and that's the Peter Roskam and Sean Kasten race.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of you listeners who aren't familiar with that congressional district, it is Henry Hyde's former district. So the person for
not
whom,
quite the same boundaries that
correct.
Henry
it's
Hyde
been gerrymandered
had,
a little bit but, since
yeah,
then, but it's
right,
the same
the sixth,
seat. It's
right.
the same seat, the congressional sixth. And so Henry Hyde, who was of course the great pro-life orator, gave some of the most moving speeches, particularly during the floor debates on partial birth abortion. And, of course, the person for whom the Hyde Amendment is named. And so Sean Kasten, his Democratic opponent, won that particular primary in a three-way contest between two women who essentially, I think, split the Democratic vote from what I hear from some Democratic friends. And he was not their party's first choice. Wasn't their second choice either. So he was really, they really didn't expect him to win. And he has said some extremely imprudent things. Comparing abortion to gallbladder surgery, for example.
Comparing Trump to Osama bin Laden.
Yes. Very irresponsible and imprudent things. And I'm surprised that that contest is as close as it is. And for, I think, what the pro-life community needs to know in that particular race, he has said, Kasten has said publicly, I cannot wait to take Henry Hyde's seat and then vote against the Hyde Amendment. And so if that doesn't motivate some class of voters in Peter Roskam's district. I don't, those aren't fighting words, Dan. I don't know what are.
I mean, that's, you know, and it just goes on and on and on. Kasten also said that Fox News's purpose is to keep people stupid. So if you're a Fox News watcher, you're stupid, according to Sean Kasten. He points to Dan Savage as his philosophical
mentor.
Yeah, North Star.
His role model, yes.
I mean, Dan Savage, who has called for a period of mandatory abortion.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is, again, like we're talking about in the Arizona race, a couple, three standard deviations away from reasonable. I mean, the things Sean Kasten has said in any other context, I think would be disqualifying. I don't know how some suburban families have so lost their mind that they think that he is viable or this sends some kind of message to Trump or this gives somebody their comeuppance. It would be just another self-inflicted wound in Illinois, which of course we're known for, were he to be elected over Peter Roskam.
Yeah, and what, you know, this whole kind of suburban white soccer mom, which I know is in this particular district supposed to be driving, you know, a lot of this, the closeness of this race. I don't know how any woman with integrity looks at a man who has compared abortion to gallbladder surgery and then votes for him. I think even the pro-choice women I know will say, it is such a sensitive and private area that has such ramifications, even they'll acknowledge that, that to belittle the surgery in that way, the taking of an unborn life in that way through a surgical procedure really, you know, minimizes the importance of it to women. So,
well, they might find Trump distasteful because of his name calling and his impetuous tweeting. Well, take a hard look at Sean Kasten if that's your standard by which you're going to support or send a message to somebody. I mean, it's, you know, you want to Trump to grow up, and I do too from time to time. Some of these suburban voters need to grow up too.
Right. Well, you know, the thing is too, what I've always liked about Roskam, I think I've mentioned this to you, is he's really is sort of a grassroots guy in his district. And I remember the first time he was running against Tammy Duckworth, and he told me himself that he just walked from house to house with his kids. I think he's got five or six kids. And I really do think he is someone who knows his district at a very granular level.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people know him and trust him. And so I hope that people understand what they're throwing away in terms of the type of representation they have now, because I think he's very well respected by his peers.
I hope they do, too. Yeah. I don't know.
I know mean, that sounds like, very pie in the sky, but like,
well,
I want to say, like, do you realize what you have in this man? You know,
it's just, you know, every time I want to have even moderate expectations for this state, I'm disappointed. At least that's been, oh, I don't know, the case for the last 25 or 30 years.
Yeah.
So it starts to become sort of a message being received. So, I don't know. But to your point, Roskam has been through tough reelection fights before, and he survived them. I think there's a good chance he does here, as does Randy Hultgren next door. And those are two seats, by the way, not just in terms of the balance of power in Illinois, but those two seats could be determinative, going back to the beginning of our talk, determinative in who controls the House. It's because it's that close.
And who controls the House determines whether or not we're going to have federally funded abortions. Now, we would be able to stop that in the Senate, most likely. We would possibly get a veto. But to have to relitigate the Hyde Amendment all over again is not something I would look forward to, because I think, you know, in terms of pro-life legislation, now I think the Kavanaugh, you know, confirmation gave everybody sort of a breath of fresh air, and some recent decisions, you know, the NIFLA case we've discussed before, that was, you know, of all things, Anthony Kennedy's concurrence in that case where, you know, he says to the California state legislature, you all might want to sit down and actually take a look at the First Amendment before you send this court another piece of legislation. So there was a little bit of momentum building up. And in the Indiana case, as I mentioned, that would ban sex selection abortions and abortions in the cases of Down syndrome. You know, those are the kind of cases I think that kind of present humanity right up front to abortion advocates. And also it's sort of a, you know, I dare you to oppose this legislation sort of thing. Of course they will.
Yeah.
They will. They did and they will. But I like making things a little bit more uncomfortable for them.
Well, it also speaks to how important the Senate is. And I'm not talking about just holding serve at 51-49. I'm talking about expanding, taking advantage of all these senators, pro-choice senators who are up for re-election, and they could be replaced with pro-life senators, because I think it's very likely you're going to have a Clarence Thomas retire next year if the Republicans control the Senate. You may have
Ginsburg may.
Oh, Ginsburg.
Yeah,
Breyer.
She's been holding on. God bless her. But yeah,
Breyer said that he doesn't want to be taken out of the court feet first, so to speak. So so you could have President Trump with another one or two, perhaps more, Supreme Court nominees between now and the end of his first term. So that's how important it is to build in margin for error.
Well, what other Senate races nationally should we be looking at?
Well, I mean, in terms of pickups, you're talking about North Dakota, which looks like a pretty good chance for
possibly
pickup.
Possibly Indiana.
Indiana, Missouri, Montana.
Texas hangs on.
West Virginia, Florida, Arizona. Those would be.
So potentially seven seats.
Well, I mean, those aren't all pickups, right?
Right.
Cruz is a hold.
Right. Texas is a hold.
Yeah. Arizona is a hold. Florida's a pickup. I mean, I think you're looking at 3 to 5 pickups for the Republicans on Tuesday night. So go from 51 to 54, maybe even 56. 56 would be really running the table, but I think 54 is reasonable.
Okay. All right. Well, when we come back from this next break, we'll talk about some more local races and what at stake there, particularly regarding the abortion issue. This is Mary Fiorito sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
As the news brings us to the realities of life, there is no doubt that the devil stalks the church and the culture. It is with this realization that we urge you to ask your parish to recite the prayer to Saint Michael the Archangel after Mass, and to personally recite the prayer for Saint Michael's intercession. Let us pray. Saint Michael the Archangel, defend us in battle. Be our defense against the wickedness and snares of the devil. May God rebuke him, we humbly pray. And do thou, O Prince of the heavenly hosts, by the power of God, thrust into hell Satan and all the evil spirits who prowl about the world seeking the ruin of souls. Amen. This is Bold Talk with Father Thomas Loyola.
We live in strange times, full of contradictions, many of which we create and then force upon ourselves. An example.
To hear the rest of this and other Bold Talks with Father Thomas Loya, visit taberlife.org and subscribe.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, where you can enter into the presence of Christ 24/7. Every first Saturday afternoon will be a special opportunity for healing. At 4:30, bring your petitions for our Blessed Mother's intercession as we pray the Rosary. Then, at 5, we share the body of Christ in the Holy Mass. Also, at 5:30, a Spanish Mass, followed by a Eucharistic procession, adoration, the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and an anointing.
Enter into the sacred space of St. Stanislaus Kostka and place yourself before Christ for healing. On first Saturday afternoon, starting at 4:30, find St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, 2 blocks north of Division, on Noble, just off the Kennedy in Chicago, and find peace and healing.
And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. I'm joined today by Dan Proft, the host of Chicago's Morning Answer, just down the dial from us at 560 a.m. And Dan, we've been talking about the midterms. Is it going to be a blue wave? Is it going to be a purple wave? Red? Is it going to be no wave at all and just really not change anything very much? We've been talking about the Peter Roskam race, which is symbolic for both sides on the abortion debate because it's essentially Henry Hyde's old seat in the 6th Congressional District. But also right next door, there's a really contentious race going on and a very close one between Randy Hultgren and Lauren Underwood.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned on air this morning a really interesting fact about Lauren Underwood. You can't turn on any station without seeing this ad, television ad of Lauren Underwood working as a nurse in what looks to be some kind of low-income healthcare clinic and talking about how as a nurse, you know, she's treated patients and doesn't want to see anyone with pre-existing conditions and that's why, you know, eliminated from their healthcare plans and that's why she ran for office. Turns out not so much.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is another instance of the Chicago Press Corps falling down on the job or pulling a punch for one of their fellow travelers.
Do you think they knew?
I don't know.
It's hard to know what they knew and didn't.
I don't know.
But you know, that to me is highly unethical if they knew and they didn't follow
up on
that story.
Well, this is the need for the papers that I started with a couple other people, frankly, because you just get stories covered that would never be covered by the Chicago Press Corps that's in the tank for the Democrats. I mean, they're the comm shop for their Chicago Democrat crime families.
Right.
And so Lauren Underwood, it turns out, I mean, first of all, 32-year-old, She's characterized, reported, 32-year-old nurse from Naperville. Well, she's just 32 years old. She moved back to Naperville a year ago. She's living in her parents' house. Her dad, apparently a successful manufacturing executive. They live in the White Eagle subdivision.
Which is a very prominent area of Naperville, yes.
Good golf course there. She's a registered nurse, but she's never practiced.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't want to practice.
Right.
We actually found a clip of her from April, a podcast conversation she had where she said, never had any interest in actually working as a nurse.
Right.
I always knew my calling would be in the public policy field. And that's all well and good. But when you put on the nurse's uniform, and as you said, in these commercials, you've got a stethoscope and you're taking somebody's...
You've got your charts.
Yeah. It looks like you're tending to patients. You're giving a false impression. You're not a practicing nurse. You're just a registered nurse.
And you
nurse.
Never were one.
And you never were one.
You
and you never
degree,
practiced. You never had
license.
Any patients.
Yeah.
And so it's a complete misrepresentation. And if Randy Hultgren was holding himself out in a way that was fraudulent, misrepresenting who he is or what he does, I'm sure the Chicago Press Corps would be all over it. And they've been completely asleep at the switch with millions upon millions of dollars in Democrat money backing Lauren Underwood and putting those commercials on the airwaves that are ubiquitous in mail pieces and people's mailboxes and the like. So we've done this story, and I know Randy now is going to talk about it today with the Chicago Press Corps. But it's really a dereliction of duty that she got away with this as long as she did.
Yeah. When did the reporters from your newspaper discover that factually she had never been a nurse?
We started looking into it last week, and we mm-hmm. published a story over the week, late last week.
Because unfortunately, it may come a little bit too late now for most voters. I mean, so many people have voted early, I heard you on air this morning talking about some of the ethical violations that would apply to us as lawyers. You know, if I ran an ad and showed me you sitting in a judge's robe or something like that, prosecuting a criminal.
Or me. I mean, I have a JD.
Right.
I never sat for the bar, so I'm not a registered attorney.
You don't have your license.
If I was holding myself out as a practicing attorney, that would be a violation of the canons. And
correct.
I'm not looking to have her... indicted. I'm not talking about this being criminal, but it's political fraud, and people should factor that into their vote.
Right. And the whole with me, what bothers me just as much is this whole, you know, moving back to Illinois within a year of the election to become the candidate to try and take out, you know, a congressman. And in a similar but a statewide race, the race between Curran and Fitzgerald, this Bridget Fitzgerald, mm-hmm. who also, you know, lives in her parents' basement as a 30-year-old.
And second cousin of John Cullerton, the Senate president.
Correct. With Planned Parenthood ties, I'm sad to say. And that particular race, another one very similar where from I have an acquaintance who happens to live on that block and who told me that she actually has an apartment on the north side and she has moved back to her parents' house within the last year, you know, to, you know, in order to run for office and take out Curran. I always want to say Mark Curran, but that's the sheriff.
John Curran.
Thank you. Who's a very good guy, very much liked in his district. But, you know, she was the former St. Patrick's Day queen. And so therefore, everybody, you know, who's Catholic or who has an Irish surname, you know, is obliged to vote for her now.
Well, Curran is an Irish name, too. But I mean, but here's the thing, you know.
But he's never won the St. Patrick's Day Queen contest.
None.
And that is the difference.
Not yet.
Yes.
Not yet. He hasn't.
But you know what? In today's world, that's now possible.
Right. He could enter
that's
if he'd like.
Because that's
sure.
a very discriminatory race.
I mean, look, we talk about this and there's no question that it is. What's President Obama's favorite phrase? That this is the old okie doke. He likes to use that phrase. It's artifice. It's putting people on. And that's what the political ruling class in the state does. However, I should hasten to add that a lot of these problems are the direct result of a feckless, weak, virtually non-existent Republican Party. And so, you know, when you don't offer much competition or have no alternative vision, which could generate some competition, then don't be surprised when the other side seizes the opportunity to slaughter you. And that's what Democrats have done for many cycles now.
Well, and you know, talk about dropping the ball. Look at Dan Lipinski's opponent, right, in that district where the Republicans were not watching
asleep
at the wheel. And a neo-Nazi gets the nomination against Dan Lipinski. And, you know, this is what the Republican Party has to choose from in that particular district.
Yeah, well, thankfully,
another disgrace.
I should make a note because I've been telling people, do not vote for Art Jones. When you see that, don't be fooled by the R. There is a write-in, official write-in candidate named Ken Yerkes, who's a legitimate guy, doctor. So write in his name. Or, you know, if you don't want to vote for Lipinski, whatever, either way, but don't vote for Art Jones.
Right.
But, I mean, the fact that we even have to go through these machinations is an embarrassment. It's a disgrace.
Yeah. No. And you know, the other thing, too, that the Republican Party in this particular Fitzgerald Curran race, you know, I really think that there should, in some kind of electioneering law, candidates should be mandated to have at least one public debate in their final, you know, round at one point. She has completely stayed under the radar. She does not do interviews. She will not do debates. You know, I don't know if she wears her tiara and then goes around and shakes people's hands in the district, but that seems to be all she's doing.
That's the Chicago Democrat model in the suburbs. It's been Madigan and Cullerton's model for a long time, and a lot of suburban areas have bought it, which is just, you know, smile and be nice and we'll bury your opponent on TV and in the mailbox with overwhelming resources.
Yep.
And, you know, suburban families, again, all these college-educated people, they're so smart, they're so with it, and they're so cool. And they have, and they, on the one hand, say, oh, yeah, Mike Madigan and one, this guy lording over the state for 40 years is a real problem.
Right.
And the way that I'm going to address it where I live in the suburbs is to vote for one of his roll call votes. Well, those two opinions are mutually exclusive. And the inability to connect dots never ceases to amaze me.
Well, you know what it reminded me of back in the day was when Joe Morris ran against John Stroger for Cook County Board President. And John Stroger would not debate Joe Morris. Joe Morris would have to go on Chicago Tonight by himself. In no form would he go opposed. And because, of course, Joe Morris, a Jewish man from the North Side.
He would destroy
real intellect.
John Stroger.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. Tremendous intellect. You know, really very much involved in ecumenical affairs, though as a very serious practicing Jew. Much loved in the pro-life community for his very, you know, ethically bound stance on that particular issue. And so I just remember the utter frustration. I was talking to his wife at some event that this guy got away with not even appearing in front of a camera with him or in front of an audience with him even one time.
Well, Earl Long famously said, people don't want good government, they want good entertainment. And apparently,
and boy, do we give it to him.
Apparently he was talking about Chicago.
Yes, he must. Well, so just to kind of touch back on that Lauren Underwood, Randy Hultgren race, is that's very close as well, I know. But yes. Mandy Halkrin does seem to have some of the name recognition and the
Well, it's a district also too. I mean, Hillary Clinton won Roskam's district by 6, Trump won Halkrin's district by 4, so it's a little bit more of a Republican district. There's a little bit more of a firewall there of Republican voters in Halkrin than there is in Roskam.
And you know, I have to say, when I was actually just driving on my way in here, I was listening to your station, and the ads, Halkrin had a couple ads on just while I was listening. And you know, they're refined, they're educated. It's an educated man talking. They're not flame-throwing. They're talking about his accomplishments.
Yeah, he's not a flamethrower.
No, it's just really, I was so impressed by the quality and the caliber of his ads, but more of a, you know, it was a gentleman's tone. And, you know, you see so little of that. And speaking of gentlemen and people who aren't gentlemen, over the weekend, we started by talking a little bit about Saturday Night Live. Saturday Night Live had a little skit where they took a former military person,
Dan Crenshaw,
who is running for which office?
Congress in Texas.
For Congress in Texas, and who lost his eye in battle, and you know, shed his blood literally for this country, and because of that, he wears an eye patch, and you know, featured a picture of him, and then said, "Well, gosh, you know, doesn't he look like a cowboy porn star or something like that?" But I heard Crenshaw interviewed this morning talk about a gentleman, talk about not taking the bait, and a refined and dignified response to something. I don't think, you know, Mike Gallagher was talking about it as an attack. I don't know that I see it as an attack. I just see it as like ignorance and
bad comedy.
And it wasn't even funny. That's the thing. It wasn't even funny, Dan.
Well, I liked his response where he's not going to demand an apology or anything, because what's the point of that? What's the value of an insincere apology from some, you know, half-baked SNL cast members? Who cares? The more valuable thing, as he pointed out, is just essentially intimating, is that these people demonstrated who they are.
Right.
And so, you know, take that into consideration.
Right.
You know it's just, when people show you who they are,
believe them.
And
exactly.
And they demonstrated who they are. And if that they think that somebody losing their eye in service to this country when an IED explodes, that is funny or puts him in the category of weird-looking people running for Congress,
right.
which is what that skit was, then fine. Then that's a certain sensibility. And if you want to cast your lot with that sensibility, then you're free to do it in this country.
Right.
But I think most people do not want to do that.
I mean, and just, like, at what point did it become okay, simply because someone's running as a Republican, to mock a disabled person? I mean, can you imagine? Now, we saw what happened when President Trump did it
to
the New York Times reporter.
Right.
And I'm hoping, as you would likely point out, natural market forces will force this Pete Davidson from the show, or at least will force an apology out of NBC. Maybe not.
I mean, who cares about the apology?
No, I agree with you on that. I do. But I think Crenshaw himself made the point that essentially he's getting what he deserves just from people who are watching
exactly.
that very show. So I needn't do anything.
And Dan Crenshaw, the Navy SEAL, he doesn't need Pete
right.
Davidson's apology.
That's right, exactly. Know? No, I think Pete Davidson will learn his lesson on his own. But it's funny to me, and it shouldn't be, but it is the double standard that operates.
For sure.
If it's Republican disabled person, then that's fair game. But
for sure. And look, this is where we need to be. Better, I would say, my advice to conservatives is you need to be better at being a street fighter, but that doesn't mean you need to be unhinged.
No.
And so Crenshaw played it brilliantly, but he didn't walk away from it. He didn't ignore it. He seized
it. Right.
But he seized it to make a particularly salient point. And that's what you do.
Right.
And unfortunately, too many people that are of a conservative bent are afraid to be labeled with the silliness of the isms and the phobias that are the left's stocks and trades, and you got to be willing to stand and deliver in the face of that.
Well, you know, hopefully this will be the last time we see a disabled veteran made fun of in any context whatsoever. Probably not. I know you, listeners, Dan has rolled his eyes at me across the console here.
But you know, I don't know how closely you've been paying attention to the culture these days.
You know me. I like to think that the men's better angels will be called into play here. But it just, you know, again, it kind of speaks to me at about how nervous they must be. Does that make sense? You know, it's the sort of like the complaining child, and
but it's also the mocking and you're a racist, you're a bigot, you're a xenophobe, you're this, you're that. That's all they have.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that one of the other things is it should be clear from this cycle, if it wasn't before, that all they have in their arsenal is this.
Right.
All they have is Shelby Steele wrote this brilliant piece in the Wall Street Journal a couple weeks ago. All they have is hate.
Yeah. Hate, and, you know, and they talk, and this is the interesting thing about why at kind of the beginning of the segment, I asked you a little bit about the Trump rallies. To hear CNN talk about it, those were fear-inducing, you know, xenophobic, anger-provoking rants by the president to try to whip the base up into some kind of frenzied, you know, rush to the polls to vote against, you know, people of color and LGBTQ people. So,
you hear his
remarks, which I went back to and listened to kind of carefully because I want to make sure I'm, you know, and he was talking about the economy. I'm not sure how that translates into, most of it was economy driven, if I recall correctly.
Well, the New York Times had this headline over the weekend about, you know, the nation confronts the turmoil that besets it on Tuesday. You know, I think that they're projecting a bit, the D.C. press corps. I think there's a lot more turmoil among the elites in these institutions like the Fourth Estate than there actually is on the ground with regular people living their workaday lives.
Right. Well, you know, and this is something I noticed. I remember I tweeted this right before the election. You talk about the enthusiasm gap. You know, there was like nothing in my neighborhood in terms of signage. And for either, I think people who put Trump signs on had them taken down, but there wasn't a Hillary sign to be seen anywhere. And then when you got to Oak Park, it was who was the third party candidate? Ron Johnson, was that his name? Who was
Gary Johnson.
Gary Johnson, yeah. There were signs, you know, because it's Oak Park. So the Gary Johnson signs were everywhere, but no Hillary Clinton. And that's when I kind of started to think, you know, of course she'll probably win Illinois, but I thought this is not going to go her way. And I think you're seeing a lot of that, like, you know, same as I was driving here today, very few signs. I was driving through Western Springs, visiting one of my relatives on Sunday, about equally, you know, a smattering of Bridget Fitzgerald signs, smattering of Curran signs, some J.B. Pritzker, no Rauner signs.
No.
And so that's something I do want to discuss, because I think a lot of voters who are Catholic or Christian are really facing a dilemma tomorrow, and if they've not already voted, and that is, do you vote for Pritzker? Do you vote for Rauner? Do you leave it blank? Obviously, they're going to go and vote for other races. I know you've addressed this topic a little bit, but, you know, can you help me flesh this out for people who really are having, you know, concerns because of Rauner's signing HB 40, which, of course, has opened up the floodgates of free abortions in Illinois, to Pritzker's, you know, very strong support of abortion and his ties to the abortion industry. What is one to do?
Well, one has to make their own decision on this. Look,
well, yeah, but you know this so well.
Over. The race has been over for as long as I said it was over, which is about 18 months, ever since Rauner signed HB 40.
Yeah, that was it.
In a long run of idiotic things that he did, treacherous things, betrayals, really. This isn't just dumb. This is betrayal. And I use that word very specifically, traitorous actions.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to hold traitors to account, as far as I'm concerned. Otherwise, you don't have a party and you don't have a point to the party. So and this is not just I was involved in Jeannie Ives' campaign. This is not just because of his lowbrow, dishonest, you know, Jeannie Ives, Madigan's favorite Republican campaign, where he snookered just enough people to survive the primary. I said from the beginning, if we nominated Rauner to be our gubernatorial candidate for the Republican Party, we would lose. He's going to lose. He's going to lose going away. And that's exactly what's going to happen.
And I think Jeannie Ives would have absolutely given Pritzker a run for his
money. No, there's no question. Yeah. It's a totally different race, different dynamic. It was an opportunity to change the trajectory of the party, to reintroduce a second party in the state,
right,
and to potentially change the future of the state in one night. Yeah. We missed that opportunity. But I will say this. I'll tell you just what I'm doing, and then people can make up their mind. I am not voting that race. I'm leaving that race
blank.
What
about the third party candidate?
No.
No, okay.
Sam McCann is, yes, he's personally pro-life, but he's in this race and he's allowing himself to be used as a shill for Mike Madigan to attack pro-life suburban Republicans like Tom Morrison and Peter Breen and John Cabello and so many others. It's a total Trojan horse play with his conservative party brand and his pro-life bona fides. But he's being used by Madigan and funded by Operating Engineers Local 150, and all that money's going to attack pro-life Republicans. So don't buy it.
So, yeah, can we just talk about some of those, just getting down to a more granular level here in Illinois, some of those local races against good, solid pro-life, and in most cases Catholics, you know, who are really being challenged by Democratic candidates who are backed by the abortion industry. The Peter Breen race, for one, Very, very true. I mean, in addition to being a good, solid pro-lifer, he's the adopted father of two children, a lawyer from Notre Dame, but really a solid fiscal conservative, a responsible man, a very, very hardworking man. He's liked by his colleagues on both sides of the aisle. Tell us a little bit about that race in particular and why you think, we know why the other side has put up such a fight against him, but how you think that might turn out.
It's close. Yeah. It's a very close race. I had Peter up a couple of points as of last week. So this is Peter Breen is in Lombard. That's an important race. He's an incumbent. Tom Morrison, another principal pro-life conservative in Palatine. He stretched it out a little bit, but that's a tough race. Mark Batnick in Plainfield, another conservative, pro-life, reformer, thoughtful guy. These are important seats that you have to hold. Amy Grant, who's replacing Jeannie Ives in Wheaton, mm-hmm. who's a DuPage County board member, that's an important race to hold. Deanne Mazzocchi in Elmhurst. Jay Kinsler, who's challenging Deb Conroy in Eastern DuPage. I mean, all of these suburban races.
And names you might not necessarily know, aside from Peter Breen and Jeannie Ives.
Right. Or kind of, you'll know them if you
Tom Morrison,
live in the district.
Right.
Yeah. But some of them are new entrants onto the scene. And oh, by the way, we need new entrants onto the scene that are going to be principled in the model of Breen and Morrison and Ives if you're going to turn around the party and turn around the state. And so these names are important both as incumbents or replacements to Republicans who retired. As well as challengers to suburban Democrats who should have never been elected in the first place, like Deb Conroy in Eastern DuPage or Marty Moylan in Park Ridge against Marilyn Smolinski or Sam Yingling up in Grays Lake against Ken Idstein. If you don't reelect those incumbents that we mentioned, if you don't turn out some of the Democrat incumbents in the suburbs for these challengers, you're not going to have a Republican Party that's competing. You're not going to have the prospect of any change to a status quo that 85% of the populace in the state rejects.
Right.
Well, you're going to have a continued exodus is what you're going to have.
Well, and this is why Jeannie Ives not running for reelection is so sad. I mean, I just hold her in such high regard as a person and just as a mom and as someone who's served our country. And do you know what the future might hold for her? I'm not asking you to share anything confidential, but I hope she doesn't disappear from the public eye because I think she's such a gift. She's such a composed person. She's so articulate. She's smart and hardworking. And I just hate to see someone like that go away.
Yeah, I don't think she's going to go away. She's been very active this cycle supporting these legislative candidates, many of the names I just mentioned. And I think, you know, in terms of what the future holds, will she run for office again or something like that? I think we'll have to see what the world looks like when the dust settles after tomorrow.
Right. I did see that she's now joined the board of Illinois Right to Life.
Yes.
I think what a wonderful mm-hmm. contribution she's going to make there because they're very carefully following some of the legislative stuff that's going on. And then do you think now I'd just like to ask just kind of to close maybe on this governor's race here in Illinois. Do you think sort of at the end of the day, I know for me, HB 40, you know, was my bright line in the sand, and I cannot in conscience vote for somebody who did that.
Just to understand the magnitude of this, to put a fine point on it, it made him the most pro-abortion governor in the history of America.
Yeah.
I don't know how it gets worse than that.
Well, Dan, you look, I mean, Planned Parenthood's opened the new clinic in Flossmoor. They're planning to open four more. There's a new spa abortion clinic. It's opened up in Skokie. The abortion industry is now, I mean, they're not stupid, right? They're seeing the unlimited cash that's mm-hmm. going to flow into their businesses, right? And that's what abortion is at the end of the day. It is a business, multi-billion-dollar-a-year business. And I was just up, I gave the keynote up at Wisconsin Right to Life's dinner up in Wausau, Wisconsin, last month. And, you know, they had all these wonderful charts, you know, showing their abortion, their yearly abortion number, which is about 7,500 a year, you know, and then next to Illinois, which is 37,500 abortions. Now, I did point out after they'd put that graphic up, some of their Milwaukee area abortions are people coming over into the Illinois border
right.
to get them because they're free and taxpayers in Illinois. The taxpayer-funded abortion does not just apply to residents of Illinois. You can be a Medicaid recipient in Indiana or in Wisconsin or in Iowa, and you can just cross on over and get your free abortion. You know, think of, you know, East St. Louis, which is in Illinois, but, you know, the areas around there that go over into the, you know, Missouri border. We're basically giving out free abortions to neighboring states on our dime, you know. So it really is a tremendously... impactful thing, not only in terms of the number of lives lost, but in terms of what this is going to cost people who live in. Do we have the highest property tax?
Highest property tax in the nation. And so this is, I mean, yeah, even if you're pro-choice, this is an open-ended entitlement.
Right.
So that's why it's just double. It's just the worst public policy on so many levels.
Well, Dan Proft, I am so grateful. We'll see what happens tomorrow. I'll be listening tomorrow morning to get your insight. And thank you so much for joining us. Such a gift to have you. This has been Mary Helen Fiorito sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on listener-supported AM 750 WNDZ. Have a blessed week.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time.